Julian Assange is still battling extradition to the United States. He's in an English prison awaiting the decision of the UK Home Secretary Priti Patel, and that decision will come any day now. If Assange loses this time, he can evidently still appeal for permission to appeal to the UK High Court or the European Court of Human Rights. The espionage charges he's facing in the US carry a maximum penalty of 175 years. Amnesty International is in his corner. A great many people are. Former British Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn says he's done no more than tell the world about military planning, military policies and the horrors of the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, and I think he deserves to be thanked. On the other hand, and the other hand is quite big and powerful, opinions differ from that. Alison Stanger, for example, a professor of international politics and economics at Middlebury College, wrote in the Washington Post a while back, Assange's indictment by the United States is not the attempted silencing of a whistleblower or a threat to press freedom or an abuse of power. She said that questioning him more broadly might yield potentially valuable information about how Russia intervened in the 2016 US election. So it may be that people's politics tend to decide whether they like Julian Assange or not, or approve of what he allowed to be made public and the WikiLeaks troves of information. But the issues have always been complex as well. America's Espionage Act has never been used against a journalist before, apparently, and Assange is considered by many people to be one because he's won big journalism awards. Was he right to spill the beans on US military secrets and the way the CIA goes about its surveillance, or to show the world how a US helicopter gunship gunned down a group of Iraqi men mistaken for combatants, of whom two were Reuters journalists? There was information divulged about various institutions and leaks unfavourable to various governments, not just that of the United States. His supporters have gathered regularly for protests while he's been in jail and vigils outside the maximum security Belmarsh prison. He's been there since 2019. And in the film we're about to discuss, they sing a version of this song.
You can deny me, you can decide to turn your face away. No matter, 'cause there's something inside so strong. I know that I can make it. You're doing me wrong, so wrong. You thought that my pride was gone. Oh no, something inside so strong.
There's a new documentary playing in the Dock Edge Festival. It's called Ithaca, which was the Greek island Odysseus reached at last after 10 arduous years, and it's on the side of Assange. But like Odysseus, it follows an unusual route. It doesn't relitigate the entire WikiLeaks saga, and nor shall we. It doesn't cover Sweden's extradition attempts or focus that much on his time in the Ecuadorian embassy in London, the tales that have been well told. It follows his dad, John, and Julian Assange's wife, Stella Morris, as they fight for his freedom. John Shipton is 76. He's a retired builder. He didn't see much of his son till Julian's early 20s. That's a long story he doesn't want to discuss when it's put to him early on in this doco. But in it, in the film, he sacrifices his own family time. He has a young daughter to be in England with his son. He even travels to the US to try and persuade the Biden administration to forget about his son. It won't. John Shipton visits New Zealand quite a bit. He comes to Waiheke Island. His mother lived in New Zealand and died here. John Shipton, good morning.
Good morning, Jim.
How did you afford, I wondered, you know, the time away from home to fight for Julian, and how do his wife Stella and their children survive? This saga must be financially exhausting along with everything else.
Well, financially, you know, we depended upon donations, very just small donations from Germany, France, the UK, and mostly Australia, New Zealand. That kept us going for a couple of years. And then in February and March, Gabriel, Julian's brother, my other son, he put together an NFT, a non-fungible token, and that was sold for Ethereums, and that gathered 54 million at that time, 54 million US dollars. I think that's about 80 million NZ, and that will, you know, enable payment of lawyers and so on. I think the lawyer bill is expected to be 40 million USD. That was had 10,000 people in it who made significant donations of Ethereum. Yeah,
I knew there was a crypto connection. That's a lot of crypto money, isn't it, John? That's enormous sum.
I think it's the second largest donation ever made. The artist was named Pak, P-A-K, and he designed, along with Julian, the NFT to be sold.
So he's been in isolation. His mental and physical health have both deteriorated, the documentary chronicles. He sounds very down at times as he talks to Stella on the phone, but he also can sound lucid and wry. So since the documentary was made, what's he been like?
Well, you know, that up and down, that's exactly how Julian is. But since the marriage and two lovely kids, that was, as you can imagine, very, very uplifting. And the ceremony itself was a lot of fun because we're in an alcove, a prayer room, they call it, to the chapel, and it has emergency buttons on the wall, which children really not interested in the marriage ceremony, but very interested in red and green buttons. ran around the place trying to push the buttons while the guards skittered from one button to the next to try and stop the kids, alerting the jail to, you know, a disaster. So, yeah, that was a lot of fun. Also, the circumstances in Australia where, you know, the film has been released. It'll be on the 6th of June, released in 2 one-hour sections on the ABC. And moving, of course, the film to New Zealand. So Australia, New Zealand is sort of uplifting themselves to ensure that, you know, the son of this land is brought home. Stop this awfully cruel, sadistic treatment of a publisher. He published stuff. That's all. And other publishers like New York Times, Guardian, Der Spiegel, El País in Spain, Le Monde in France, published as well, but their editors aren't arraigned or indicted and hounded and mobbed and smeared for years. It's really, just really extraordinary.
Are you worried, because there is in your family, isn't there, it says in the documentary, a history of suicide, and you and your son are Aspergic. Are you worried that if he has to go to the US, John, in the end, that will be the end of him?
Oh, absolutely. If a person can speak about something which is classified, they put them in SAMs. A SAMs cell has two doors, one wooden and one steel. In that cell, they have a solitary. You know, they're kept in solitary. So what happens is that they get so anxious to speak to another human being, they yell. And the cell next door or across the aisle, they yell. And those that have been there for many years who are mad yell anyway. They just yell. So this hellish cacophony echoes up and down the hallway. I mean, who's going to put up with that? It's you know, the warden of that jail, that particular jail that has those 20 special administrative cells in it, says that his jail is worse than hell. Julian Assange's circumstance is the beginning of a way out of this, as an icon of this intimidation and oppression of publishers and journalists and those who wish to write and comment and make analysis. It's a way out to free Julian, bring him home to get a bit of rest and repair and be with his family and just simply play with his kids and sit in a coffee shop and watching the passing parade of life on the street.
You have the UN Special Rapporteur on Torture, Nils Meltzer, in the documentary saying psychological torture is used to break people. I know this huge story is not about you, but as you remind us, but the documentary is about you as it seeks to explore the psychologies of you and Julian. I mean, you are patently a deep and thoughtful man. You're a philosopher. You build homes or built homes because they are a stage for the theatre of life that goes on inside them. You seem a bit anhedonic, but you like facilitating better lives for other people. In the film, you discuss the difference between the difficulty of destiny versus the ease of narrative. What do you mean by that, John?
Narratives are used by institutions now to bring us along in their policies. You know, that each section of life is an Ithaca, a destiny. And at the end, towards the end anyway, when you arrive at the island, Ithaca, you arrive enriched with the experiences of life. But if you give your thoughts to a narrative, well, then you say, oh, well, I didn't get rich. For God's sake. I mean, you know, nobody wants that sort of thing to bother their heads with. When you come to the island and recognize your destiny, and you won't have been cheated. You won't have been shortchanged because you have the richness of experience. Anyway, I'm starting to rant a bit, forgive me, but it's a lovely question to attempt to answer.
Well, here's another one. The man who wrote the English words to our national anthem, Thomas Bracken, also wrote a poem called Not Understood. It's on his gravestone, and it ends, day by day, how many cheerless, lonely hearts are breaking, how many noble spirits pass away, not understood. And in the film, you say you are not understood, and I imagine you think like father, like son. And a reporter asks in the film, why do you think there is no great public love for Mr. Assange? And that's been an important aspect to this whole 13-year saga, hasn't it?
Yes. You know, my great-uncle Vivian, he came back from the First World War. He was a medical orderly, and he fell off the roof in Maitland, and the coroner said, you know, that not going to have a war veteran declared a suicide. So the coroner declared an accidental death. However, what was put on Vivian's gravestone was, Vivian Shipton's gravestone, was not understood. And so that's where I take that from great uncle Vivian's. So he must have read Bracken's poem.
One salient point is that whatever your opinion of what Julian's done, your argument is that he could be out on bail, as you say, spending time with his wife and children on electronic bail, electronically surveyed, as an op-ed piece in The Guardian says. So is he a flight risk? Would he flee somewhere? Would he flee to Russia? What would he do?
Well, why would he want to go to Russia, for God's sake? Abandoning that and abandoning, you know, running off to Russia or China would bring ruinous reputational, oh gosh, it would just ruin, you know, it would ruin WikiLeaks of the author of it running away to Russia and so on. It, you know, also he has babies there, little children. He's 50 years old. He hasn't even had a parking ticket.
Yeah.
The flight risk is just another means to sadistically, there's no other word for it, although sometimes I use the word grotesque contortions.
We're talking with John Shipton, the father of Julian Assange. Joe Rogan, the famous, infamous, depending on your point of view, podcaster. You're listening to him in the back of a car in this doco as you're travelling to the extradition hearing of a couple of years ago. He's talking with Edward Snowden, and Snowden says America wants your son simply because he exposed war crimes. And Rogan makes the point that Julian was the darling of the left, and they both sort of agree that was fine when George Bush's government was in the firing line, but not after WikiLeaks got hold of emails pertaining to Hillary Clinton. So you listen to this, and then you turn to Stella and you say Snowden was across the material really well. So you agree, you think that right or left, it simply depends on whose agenda is being served rather than the straight blind justice of extradition criteria, John.
Well, yes, I meant in that comment that, you know, Snowden had kept himself up to date and is across the material and can make a coherent and proper conversation with another person who's equally across the material and deliver to us a sound opinion.
Because a former Ecuadorian politician, I think it is, says in your film, extraditions are 99% politics and 1% law. But in fact, judges do agonize over laws of extradition, as they have done here as well. There is still due process, isn't there?
Well, yeah, due process. Where is that in the case of Julian Assange? We look for it. The judge refused to allow Julian to sit in the body of the court, had to sit in this glass box. The glass box is constructed for to have terrorists in there. Julian's a 50-year-old publisher, uses a pencil.
You say in Ithaca at that time of the documentary's making, things will only get worse for Julian. But important elements within the UN are on his side: the European Commissioner for Human Rights, 15 current and former world leaders, two Nobel laureates, hundreds of elected politicians, and thousands of journalists, seemingly. So he has a lot of people going to bat for him. You think in the end that's going to work?
What I meant by that comment is that in human life, we only have time. Every minute that Julian's banged up, it gets worse. I'm endlessly thankful and overjoyed at the warmth that people show for Julian's circumstance. But it only gets worse. That was a year ago we made that. So another year of Julian's life has gone away, never to be recovered.
The US government won't go against a clearly announced national security position. I mean, they simply won't have it aired. You know, they don't want what was in WikiLeaks aired, despite the First Amendment guaranteeing freedom to tell the truth, you know, by citizens as well as media. They will not budge from that position in the end, even under Biden.
And then having traveled through the United States and spoken to many people, that is their prime concern, that the erosion of the First Amendment stop. And that gives us a lot of support in the United States.
Presumably, there's a feeling that the big powers of the world all behave in various ways, but in the same way in terms of the keeping of their secrets. So presumably the National Security Advisor or the National Security Agency might well say to a president, "Sir, you cannot go soft on this man, or none of our secrets or our modi operandi are safe."
The justification of policies by government to us is a necessity. It's not something that is done either or, you know, or maybe we'll do it. It's an absolute necessity because governments get carried away with themselves and they need our input to formulate their policies because we are as bright as them. I've met many people in institutions and parliaments and so on and so forth, and we're as smart as they are. It's just that they hide information from us so that we have difficulty in formulating policy positions. In Prometheus Unbound by Shelley, he makes the point that the road to freedom is knowledge. There's no other way to be free other than have some knowledge and discuss it with your friends and come up with a position that gets a verisimilitude, a closeness to the truth.
Speaking of verisimilitude, I mean, you'd be disappointed that the Mueller inquiry didn't exonerate Julian from the emails obtained by the Russian hackers, which did Hillary Clinton no favours in 2016. Or the claim that he went easy on the Russians, turning down a cache of material damaging to the Kremlin. There was even the claimed plot by the Russians to spirit him out of the Ecuadorian embassy. When you hear these stories and these allegations on the flip side of it all, what do you think?
Oh, well, it's simply wrong. Mueller, in his declaration, did say that they had no evidence.
I find that interesting. Quite early on in the documentary, when you say your position in all this is that he is your son, and we all understand that. But also, of course, you have to believe in his innocence, as you obviously do, or you couldn't sustain your position and your activities. But you've girded your loins in taking on, at your stage in life too, a lot of activity.
I mean, I'm all right. You know, I'm chatting to you. I'm sitting here in the WikiLeaks truck. It's quite comfortable, you know. So one has to, you know, and after we speak, I'll have a cup of coffee, and no doubt you will, you know, sponge the blood from your ears as this rant rave away. But, you know, we will go on, and tonight I'll have dinner and a glass of wine. But Julian's still in that bloody cell, you know.
What do you tell your daughter Severine when she asks why her half-brother is in jail? I mean, these conversations...
she asked me if I'm going to catch... I mean, she thinks I'm going to catch a taxi out to the jail, to Belmarsh prison, and pick him up. Like, why don't you get a taxi and just go pick him up instead of catching the train? I mean, you know, there's the beauty of their innocence and their love of life and the expectations that life is a good thing is just astounding, you know, after 3 or 4 years of fighting off the depredations of state institutions. So the sweetness just overwhelms me. Yeah.
So you have yet to arrive at Ithaca in any shape or form, really, both you personally and also, you know, your experience with the saga. Will you keep on batting for Julian in the way you've done?
Of course. Jim, what else? Am I going to give up? Am I going to sort of lie down and wish I had? Or, oh, dear, I should have done. Oh, I've got to do. I mean, you know, just go on and do it. It takes the grit from the soul, you know. Takes away the grit from the soul, and you wake up in the morning and you just go on to the next thing. You don't have to have this internal conversation, you know, that I wish I'd have done that, or God, it would have been better if I'd have done this, and, you know, or, you know, gosh, I don't like the contemplation of myself not being strong enough to fight on. All of those things, well, they're not a bother. They don't happen. You just go on.
Just finally, you also say in Ithaca, of gods there are many, of men there are few. What does that quote mean for you?
I think about women and I think, gosh, they've got a hell of a job. But our task, to become a man, to become a man is no less great. And, you know, you've got to apply yourself to it. But it is a bit of a job. Yeah, we don't take it on lightly.
Indeed. John, thank you for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Jim.
John Shipton.